and the effort that I have chosen to give is not in the business, but it is in the bookends of my day.
I skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it has been.
My personal superpower, if there's like one thing that I think I'm really good at, I'm super curious.
And you know, people can write all they want, but what are people doing? And if there's anybody that's out there doing, they know how hard it is to actually do.
One of the reasons that I understood the vision that I had is because I studied perfume. I really wanted to be a perfumer. I studied pastry and art, and I knew there were cows nearby.
Because see, I'm a comic who became an actor, so I'm cheap. Like, you know, back in the day, like you could only do
one thing.
This is Polymathic by 2 p.m.
I first learned of Emily Schramm during her time on Real World DC, an MTV show that premiered in 2009. Shortly after, she became friends with my wife, two strong women who shared a passion for elite fitness. Since, Emily has evolved into a media and commerce professional. But before that, she accomplished something that few of us have, professional and social balance. The projects that she runs today are representative of this balance, a philosophy that she describes in her book, The Process. Emily has accomplished a great deal as a bootstrap direct-to-consumer founder. She's a consummate learner. By the end of this episode, you'll learn that she's just beginning. Here's our conversation. One thing you'll hear is that it's free-flowing and friendly, like we've known each other for a long time, even if we've forgotten how we first met.
I appreciate that. I was trying to think of when we first met, and I was like, it had to have been obviously through social first in 2012, wouldn't you say?
Maybe I would say a little bit earlier than that, but 2012 sounds fine. And regardless of how we met, it was because of my wife. I know that.
So that's
typically the story. I mean, it's funny. I've evolved over the years and my audience has shifted so much, but I would probably say that a large chunk of my early audience was attributed to who my wife was.
Well, she's pretty amazing.
Yeah, she's great. But yeah, so it's been really, really interesting to watch that change over the years. But yeah, so that would probably have been peak CrossFit era for you. Do you want to tell me about that?
Yeah, I mean, I found CrossFit, it was such a random time in my life where I had decided I wanted to be a trainer. So I was doing 24-hour fitness, Globo gym, personal training, but also still working on the side as washing dogs. So I was working at this place called You Shampooch. And I remember it was like a boring afternoon in between dog washings. And I was like, I am so uninspired by fitness because I'm so competitive. But the only thing that I knew that you could do with fitness that was competitive was get into a swimsuit and stand on the stage. So no judgment towards people that choose to do that, but that just wasn't the path that I wanted to take. And so I started Googling things and Fran came up. It was three ladies doing Fran. And I
explain to the audience what Fran is.
Yeah. So it's this 21, 15, 9 thrusters and pull-ups, really intense 2 to 3 minute workout that just is, if anything, the representation of what CrossFit is, I feel. And it was right after the workout, the ladies dropped off the bar and started sobbing. And I was like, I have to figure out what this is. This is amazing. I want to feel this passionate about something. So I instantly found a CrossFit gym, and that was 2011. And, you know, really it just fed everything that I am naturally addicted to. So pushing myself, seeing how I am every single day, getting better and improving. I needed those markers at that time in my life because I didn't have any constructs to kind of help myself see if I was getting anywhere and progressing. And that type of fitness really helped me kind of see my self-growth and how I was improving. I mean, I definitely got to the point where it became all consuming. And so I definitely had to rehab myself out of it. But at that time, it was really good for me to shift the focus away from any doubt or fear or feeling like I wasn't good enough or not knowing what to do with my life. It just kept me in the moment, and I was able to feel strong and capable, you know, after every single workout. So it was really helpful for many things, but in turn, it definitely had its negatives that led me to actually what I do mostly now, which is just trying to get people to understand that exercise is still such an output. And although it is our time for introspection and it is our time to take care of ourselves, and sometimes the only time we have to take care of ourselves, it still is demanding and it is an external form. So it in turn can very much lead us to burnout or adrenal dysfunction or, you know, all the things that so many times we run into feeling uninspired and uncreative. And when I look at what I do today, it's just trying to be as creative as possible. How can I be as innovative and therefore creative in everything that I do? Because that's going to keep me ahead of the game. It's going to keep me excited about my job. It's going to keep me being challenged. And as soon as I feel like I'm not in that space, then I start to reevaluate what am I doing in my life to make sure that I'm in that space again.
So let's talk about adrenal fatigue a little bit, because that's a pretty scary topic for me. I think you know me pretty well at this point. I drink a lot of coffee. I've trained every day for over 400 days.
Wow. Wow. What kind of training are you doing?
I mean, I don't want to make this episode about that, but I will say this. Here, I'll keep it simple. Sundays are 5 to 15 mile runs. Monday is Peloton for 30 to 60 minutes. Tuesday is a 5,000 to 10,000 meter row. Wednesday is 30 minutes on the assault bike. Thursday, Friday, 30 to 45 minute circuits in high intensity interval training. Saturday is either like something light like the elliptical machine or a long bike ride.
Damn. All right, well, every person is different, because I think that when I look at my ability to train, it also depends on what's going on internally. So if I have a ton of email, whatever it might be, you have to understand we all have a certain work capacity. So that's different for everyone. Your work capacity might be different than mine. So for me, if I start to notice certain signs and symptoms, that's when I start to have the conversation with myself of, am I testing my adrenals too much? And your adrenals are stress organs. They're on top of your kidneys. They are basically our survival organs that we take for granted all the time. And we're supposed to use them in times of extreme stress, but we tend to overuse them because we are always stressed. So what I start to notice when it comes to, and I tend to stay away from adrenal fatigue just because that is such a rare condition, whether it's Addison's or something where you are not producing any cortisol, which is a devastating feeling if that is something you've ever experienced. But in general, when we have adrenal dysfunction, it means that we have too little of cortisol happening in the morning or too much cortisol at night. So we're just in a mismatched pattern of when cortisol should be increased and when it should decrease. So we should have it highest in the morning and lowest at night. And that helps with us working with circadian rhythms. It helps us working with the sun. It helps us get sleepy at night instead of feeling wired and tired. And so the check that I have personally that has been really helpful just to talk about for entrepreneurs specifically, because we always push the line. We always, always, always are saying, well, what is the maximum I can do? Because I am creating the line. Therefore, I have to fill it with everything that I can think of because I'm the only one holding this. I'm the one doing the things. And if I don't do it, nobody else will. And so you just push so much into our plate and put so much on our plate. And so what it looks like for me is I wake up really groggy with like a cloud over my head, and I do need the caffeine in order for it to actually feel like I'm awake. And so I'm a big believer in coffee, but one of the simplest things that I do is noticing if I have to have the coffee before I'm awake, then I know that I am just putting myself back into that cycle. And so I try to wake up as naturally as possible with just getting into the sunshine, jumping around for a few minutes before I actually drink my espresso, having lemon and salt in my water before I have a cup of coffee, little things that get your body to remind you know, who you are, like I don't actually need something. I'm supposed to wake up good and natural. And then I sleep throughout the night. That's like a really good sign of good adrenals when you're not waking up at the in the middle of the night. And I also feel recovered and creative. And so if I'm struggling through thinking of an idea, or, you know, people talk about writer's block or not feeling like they can think of problems. Well, I think it is all our adrenals, because if we have a lot of decisions to make and we get decision fatigue, that is just ultimately our body not handling the stress that we usually can handle if we didn't have so much. So I create a lot of space for that. And so for workouts specifically, if my glutes don't fire and my lower back hurts, and sometimes even my inner knee starts to flare up, I know that something is kind of off with my adrenals, because those are the organs that are actually tied to your adrenals, or the muscles that are tied to your adrenals. So that's like a really long ramble of like, everything can be improved when you take care of your adrenals, and you can still have coffee when you are trying to take care of your adrenals, but you definitely have to always have this checklist to help yourself understand, am I actually doing more harm than good? Am I overtraining? Am I pushing myself and actually going to hurt myself in the long run?
Okay. So I think that's a great sort of way to transition this conversation really quickly. Because you're obviously a subject matter expert here. Excuse me. I think it's really interesting that you became so fixated and so studied when it comes to the human body and performance. I love how you've used that to bolster your training career, your e-commerce career. I want to talk about where you were before that, or where, you know, however you feel most comfortable talking about it, because I think it's really fascinating how your entire sort of personality and, I guess, mantra, self-drive changed from what I would say is external stimulus to internal stimulus. And I wanted to talk about that.
You know, it's interesting when I look at kind of where I started and where I'm at, and just this like reminder anytime I do get overwhelmed is that it really is, you know, I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not a business owner. First and foremost, I am just passionate about being the best that I can be in whatever realm that is. And so when I look at starting with fitness, it was, okay, personal training, this is 10 years ago, I can be a better trainer. How can I do that? Well, I can work on online and in person. Okay, this is clearly the path of least resistance. Now I'm moving everything online. And then it was, okay, well, I'm sick of selling my face. So how can I sell something other than my face? Because I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. How can I get better at being an entrepreneur if all I have is my face? So let's create products. So started getting into the product industry and really starting to understand that everything that I was doing was just following what felt good in the moment. And I think I feel really lucky. And it's also, it's a blessing and a curse, because if I see too many people doing what I am doing, I want to naturally evolve it. I want to innovate it. I don't want to see myself doing something someone else is doing. So it always is pushing me, just as a, my personality, to try something new, do it in a little different way, be a little bit more creative of how I'm doing it. And so that's a really good thing when it comes to the way I train people online, but also how I show up for my brick and mortar in Denver, right? There's things that come with that that's really great, but it also kind of keeps you on your toes in a way that I have to remember that everything that I've done up to this point is just an expression of something I am interested in. So do I want to understand why I got complete adrenal burnout? Absolutely, because I can't teach it unless I understand it. And it happened to me. Therefore, I want to know everything that happened, why I got here, and then in turn, help other people avoid it or get out of it. So it's just a natural progression that I think sometimes we take for granted as entrepreneurs and creators, that we are only experts of ourselves. And then if we're lucky enough, we can be that person for other people or create products and companies that represent us within them.
So how did you get adrenal fatigue in the first place?
Full crazy competing CrossFit while also trying to launch my second company, Evolve Motion. So when I launched the M-Pack, which was a backpack turn weight training bag on Kickstarter, I kind of threw it out there. Like, if this is a good idea, it'll be funded. And it was funded within 4 hours. And so it was this moment of like, I am not going to take anything off my plate. I'm going to keep bringing things on. These opportunities are amazing. I'm excited about having a new product company, but I didn't change any external stimulus. Everything was still the same. My workouts were still the same. My workload was still the same. I wasn't delegating. I didn't have a team. I just kept bringing on more and more things. And so I had this moment after one of my workouts. I had a splitting headache, a horrible migraine. And I never have migraines. And it was, you know, I always, when someone has migraines, I look at, you know, maybe it's tightness up here. Maybe it's a B vitamin deficiency. This is like full on complete post-workout mayhem in my head. It was just so bad. And I remember thinking, I have so many emails that I have to do. I have to reply to these Kickstarter messages that are coming in. And I like had, I literally had no energy to do it. I was exhausted. We all know this. We start to get resentful. We start to hate the thing that we were so excited to create in the first place. It becomes like this evil monster instead of something that is just fun and an expression of us. And so those were competing. And I basically had to choose every day. I was like, okay, do I choose to do my work and my work emails, or do I choose to work out? Because right now I can't do both. And so that was the first kind of step into saying, well, maybe it's not necessarily the workout, it's the what I'm doing in the workout itself. So I started getting into more of the understanding of high intensity interval training and anaerobic exercise and what that does to our adrenals if we are not completely aware of the fuel that is needed for those types of workouts. So fasted workouts, out of the question. I was doing fasted workouts. I was doing higher fat nutrition protocols while doing high intense anaerobic training. I wasn't sleeping enough. I wasn't taking nearly enough calories in for what I was doing. And so all of these factors kind of tapped into my body just completely shutting down.
Okay. So over the last, let's call it 15 years, I think you're younger than me. I don't want you to answer that question because I feel like it's not you.
Well, I don't mind. I'm 31. I don't mind.
Yeah, I'm like much older than you. I was going to say 15 years. Let's say 11, 12 years. Give me the rundown of the evolution of your career.
Yeah. So 2010 started personal training. I fully went online and doing my own thing by 2012. 2014, I launched my first product, the backpack turned weight training bag. So it's the M-Pack, the one on Kickstarter. 2015, we went completely online, had kind of our first official sale. 2016, I started Element Tea, so an herbal tea company, because I had to cut coffee through this adrenal dysfunction. And so I created an herbal coffee. It ended up becoming Christmas presents, and then it ended up becoming a company. And then I created the Body Awareness Project 2017, which is an online course and box of essentials. So it's kind of a subscription box plus course of education. And then I created Platform Strength in 2018, which is my brick and mortar gym in Denver, Colorado, which has been so wonderful to have a home base because I was online for so much of this. And what's interesting, I think you'll find this interesting too, is online communities versus in-person communities and kind of seeing the parallels between the two, but also how surprising it is to feel like, oh my God, if you can create an online community, an in-person community is like nothing. It's like so easy. It's so wonderful when you can create that online camaraderie and respect, and that it's like really true and self-perpetuating. Like in person was a breeze. It was the easiest of all the companies that I have worked on. It just like effortless when people come together. You can't really replace that. So it's fun to see the parallels right now in the time we're in, knowing that everything is going online and virtual, but there is some stuff that just can't quite get translated. It can't quite convert. And so I'm very curious to see where that takes certain people.
Let's talk about audience and community right now, because you aren't capable of doing what you've done without a focus on your audience first. So how did you go about building that audience so that you could eventually sell products and services to them?
So I think it was always just finding people with the interest for what I was doing right then. So I feel really lucky that with having an online community for so long, they have, and not all have, but for the most part, probably the best compliment I have gotten is that they are evolving right along with me. And we all know this, like, and I think of it as like a triage, like fitness is number one. You get somebody to move and that's great. There's a quick tangible result. They feel sore, they feel sweaty, they feel endorphins. That's an easy sell. The second thing is, okay, well, fitness isn't working so much. So I'm doing all the workouts, but I'm not seeing the results, or I still feel inflamed, or I don't feel the best. So nutrition is that second piece. People get curious about nutrition and they're willing to do it once they kind of get into that cycle. It's usually fitness, then nutrition. But then there's always this other layer of bioindividuality and really understanding that your body is so much different than mine. And that can be from genetics to the way your metabolism is because of your past diets, or even just the fact that you don't know what your body needs for your adrenals, right? So maybe you do really well with coffee and you can have it all the time. But if I have too much coffee, my adrenals are shot that day. So it's just this another layer that I feel I got really lucky to keep digging into. And people, when you're looking at your audience, everyone wants to learn. Everyone is curious. Everyone wants more information that's going to be applicable to them. And so I think it's just this constant communication of this is what I am really into. I'm maybe not a teacher of it yet, but I am really digging this. And then when you finally get to that point where you're like, okay, I actually am ready to teach this, the audience is so ready to purchase or be a part or collaborate. They're just already there with you because you're kind of sharing that story and, you know, giving them the questions. I think the easiest thing to think of is like, once you as an entrepreneur start to see a gap in the industry, you can't unsee it. I mean, it's everywhere. There's, you know, for me, that was my gym. I quit CrossFit and I didn't really know what to do. I didn't want to build a Globo gym or be a part of a Globo gym. So I kept seeing like, okay, well, who would this audience be? Not CrossFitters, maybe former CrossFitters, but definitely not people that are wanting to work out by themselves. So how can I fill that? How can I start to have that conversation of where do you fit and can I find people to fill this spot? And you always start to find it. So it's just saying, well, as a consumer, since I am creating what I want, what are the questions that got me here? And how can I verbalize those questions and communicate those questions through content to help other people spark their own questions that get them to be a consumer?
That's really, really fascinating. You know, I think what's really special about your situation is that you've evolved so greatly. You're one of the healthiest people that I know, and I mean that legitimately. Just the way that you go about your day, your intense focus on not just the outer fascia of fitness, the superficial, I guess you could say, but like the things that really matter, right? You've done a wonderful job of capturing that over the last 10 years that I've known you. And I think what's really interesting is that once people know like you a lot better, they will see that evolution. So can you explain how much you've had to evolve to sort of fit this role that you're in right now?
Well, I really appreciate that. I think the best way to explain it is like, I don't recognize myself from 3 months ago ever. So like there's so much that, you know, and I can, the best way to explain this. So I wrote I wrote a book called The Process because I feel like the process is what we're all in. And I wanted to write it in a way that was more abstract and more about my story of it. And so the best way to explain it is I think that we have do mode, feel mode, and know mode. And I was stuck in do mode for probably 9 of the years that you know me, where I am just a doer. I will figure out how to do something. I will have an idea and then do it. I will think of ideas and help other people do it with me. Like, I am just addicted to the doing. And so as much as, you know, I got better at doing, whether that was delegating and hiring more people and being a better leader and being a much better boss, just because you are doing rep after rep after rep of being in it and having a battle every day. I mean, there's just nothing that replaces that. So you can, of course, be a really good doer. But I had a moment in early 2019 where I was like, I am just going to constantly be on this hamster wheel. Like, my businesses are doing great. I feel like my whole life I waited to be in this position and now I'm here and I still kind of feel like meh. You know, it's like this, okay, well, what's next? I want to do something. So I never got rid of that doing something, even though on paper and in execution, what I had done would have been more than enough for so many and would have been more than enough for me 3 years ago. So I was like, well, what is this cycle? Why am I still doing so much and still not feeling like it's enough? And I just had this drop in where it was like, you yourself are your limiting factor. I am my own limiting factor because everything that is driving me is doubt or feeling like maybe I couldn't do it. So then I'm like, oh, I'll show you that I can do it. Right. So it's coming from this place that wasn't healthy. And I started to notice, like, why am I always prone to burning out? Why am I always, doing something, but then unsatisfied? And so I just really had to spend all of last year in a moment of understanding that I was doing a lot for my ego. And I got into that cycle of what feels good, what looks good. You know, am I not content unless I'm, there was an opportunity for me to be on Shark Tank. And so I got really attached to that. And it was like, why do I want that so bad, Emily? What are you trying to prove? You know, who are you trying to prove that to? And I think that so many of us struggle with that because when we are entrepreneurs and we are taking care of people and we are business owners, like, there are statistics and data and things that show your success. It's just like a workout or a Fran, right? It's like your time, you don't never want your time to get worse. But at the same time, for me, it's like, if everything still is getting, we're still good. The team's good. The team's creative. I feel creative. I'm still evolving. I'm not stuck in a place. Then why isn't that enough? Why can't I be content in the process? Because I clearly am so focused on where I am supposed to go. And that just really made me go, okay, well, I got to cut the head off my ego somehow. And that was really, you know, it's still a work in process for me because it's like, God, I think it's the competitiveness. I think your wife would totally like have better ways of articulating this than me. But like, once you get into that zone where you are a doer and you want to accomplish something, you just don't see anything else, right? You just want to get it done and crush it and be the best at it. But in that kind of style of operating, you literally can't see anything else. You can't see the people that are helping you. You're not as grateful for the things around you. You only are happy once you're there. And that is the work that I've really had to do over and over and over again to understand, am I just doing this because that's what I should do? I should sell more and 10%, 20% growth year over year. Why not? But actually, this doesn't even fit with what I do anymore. This isn't something I like anymore. This isn't something I enjoy anymore. And so I let go of a lot of things, had really hard lessons, really expensive lessons within that, but ultimately got to the place where I felt like I refuse to do things that don't light me up. And if I do things that light me up, I am never not successful in them. If I do things that I think I should be doing that don't necessarily fulfill me, but they fulfill my ego, it isn't successful, or it's only successful with a ton of bandwidth.
That's really fascinating. So where you are right now is you're managing a brick and mortar business. You're managing a collection of e-commerce businesses. I want to understand how you've maintained balance health-wise, and I would also say spiritually, while also pressing forward with those businesses. Are you saying that because those businesses fill you up, it's become effortless, or are you trying to get to that point of effortlessness right now?
Great question. I'm so at the point, I feel like I finally got to the point where it is more effortless, more effortless than it ever has been. But that doesn't go without effort. And the effort that I have chosen to give is not in the business, but it is in the bookends of my day, and sometimes right in the middle, where when things get really hard and I start to get into, I move really fast. I'm just like, and it's exhausting for my team members. It's exhausting for me. I mean, we all have been in that mode. We just want to get shit done. So before I start my day and before I end my day, I have to make effort into the spiritual part that you just said, because if those don't exist, then it is just a whirlwind, and I am just a chicken with my head cut off, and I don't know how to not prevent that mode, because that's just so who I am. And so the effort that I am putting is completely into meditation, breath work, various forms, sometimes movement, but I don't really count movement, because that's something that is such an output. For me, it doesn't actually give me internal decompression. It gives me, I should do more. And so it puts me in that space. So for me, meditation has been life-changing in a way that I was such a anti-meditator for a long time, because I couldn't sit still in my own head. I didn't know how to. And I think that was the biggest lesson, to realize, like, if I can do that, then there's so much space, so that the things that I actually do with my job and where I'm at with all the things that I'm working on, there's so much room for creativity instead of just survival, you know. And I noticed the shift happen immediately. So the effortlessness in the business is not because I'm not giving effort and I'm not trying. It's because there's so much space around it. There's clarity in a way that I've never experienced. And I wrote about this the other day. It was like, we think about making decisions every day, this, that. And that's what gets really draining, right? Because we are always making decisions, and it gets even more exhausting when we're not 100% confident in those decisions. So decision fatigue isn't, you know, when you're decisive about something. It's when you're indecisive and you're just saying, look, I don't really have a full picture, but I still, as the leader, have to make the decision. Those are the ones that get so draining. And so when I look at what meditation has done for me, or even just working on, I call it like, I mean, I get weird, Web. I get so weird. It's really woo-woo, but it helps me start to see, oh my gosh, there is no this and that. It's just this. Like the clarity that everyone is looking for is like, we don't want to make the decisions figuring out what's best case scenario, worst case scenario. It's like, I just want to know. And this knowing that comes from that clarity and that space and that taking care of yourself emotionally and spiritually, that is what I wish for everyone, because how much more room can we have to be creative and not just keep something afloat?
How do you bottle that up and sell that?
I don't know.
I'm not saying that as an observer or as someone interviewing you. I'm also saying it as someone that struggles tremendously. You are years younger than me, but far more mature. I think that's an objective observation. because there are just things that I'm not willing to do yet, or I'm not capable of doing yet.
I'll ask you this, because this is a good, I think everyone, I had resistance to it. So what's the resistance to something like spiritual health or meditation? That's what I ask everybody, is like, what is your resistance to that thing? And if you can ask the question over and over, and dig into what the resistance might be, that's your gold mine of answers, right? So like,
I think, you know, I've begun to approach that question. This is going to get sort of weird, so excuse me, audience, for sort of diverting a little bit, but you know, I'm an EO, entrepreneurs organization, and a lot of folks in EO have gone down the medicine journey path. So, you know, there's a particular place in Nashville and a lot of folks travel down there. I don't know if you've done anything like that, but you probably don't need to do it.
I'll do it all.
Okay. So yeah, I did that. It was a very eye-opening experience. I sort of recognized a lot of my personal barriers. You know, a lot of the folks that are around me, that were around me on that trip, and a lot of folks that are around me today, they know me really well in this one context. And that context is that I'm very much a hard charger. I'm always go, 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 go. You know, it's sometimes I can be a caricature of myself in that context. I mean, you know, the perception of impenetrability, meaning I don't think I'm invulnerable, but I carry myself as though I will run through anything, right? I will run through the problem rather than taking a step back, addressing the problem, and, you know, handling things in a constructive manner. So to answer your question directly, the reason why I've been opposed to that type of practice so far is because I feel scared to stop moving. I think that a lot of entrepreneurs, especially the folks that you're going to be talking to, have that same sort of sensation. Once you stop moving, you're scared that you can't pick up the same pace that you had before. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why meditation and a lot of the things that you practice now have such a, not a negative connotation, that's changing, but there's a fear of the detriment of taking time for yourself that I didn't really see until I did that little vacation in Nashville.
That's amazing. I love it. No, it's true. I mean, I have a poem literally written that's about how the doing is addictive, because we are so, that's how we survived. And, you know, this gets way deep, but if you look at do, feel, know, and really it's a triangle of manifestation, which I think I cannot overemphasize, because as entrepreneurs and creators, all we want to do is have this joy with what we do, but also success with what we do. And we want it to feel effortless, and we want it to feel easy, and we want it to feel exciting. Yep, do, feel, know. And so when we're looking at it, it's saying, okay, well, where am I the best at? And if you could pick two, most of the people are going to pick do or feel. So you and I were doers. We have always been that way. It has protected us in many cases. It's also helped us survive. It helped us get to where we are. But I always think of it this way. How you got here does not have to be how you got there. And if I remind myself of that, it is like, okay, well, what did I really enjoy of the last 10 years? Honestly, it was a blur. I didn't have a lot of moments where I was like, wow, I could cry. I am so grateful. Outside of my medicine, plant medicine journey, very few moments that I could hold on to and feel present in. And that was eye-opening for me, because I was like, all I'm doing is just action. And if I stay in this space, I'm going to try to out supplement my way through this, or I can learn that there's a better way. And I want to say that that three combo has been around for thousands and thousands of years as the art of manifestation. So it's just a matter of saying, I have to trust somebody or trust myself that maybe there could be a better, easier way. Maybe I don't have to actually push this hard. I can have more pleasure. I can be more present. And I started to notice it with my relationship, especially, and with not just for my person, but for my family and for my coworkers and my employees. It was like, who do I want to show up to them? Just a busy person, a crazy person. We all know those people in our life that are just busy all the time. And it's just so unattractive and so unappealing. And it's not a good energy to be around. So I started noticing, well, if I look like that, I already am in a place of turning off a lot of opportunities because that's not an energy that I would want to approach. So of course I'm going to have less people approach it. Why don't I try to, if I could do anything, let's just test it. And I'm not going to lie, I'm completely testing this theory in real time. And I started this in September. I hosted a retreat of 50 people here in Colorado and then decided that it was maybe not the best path for me. And so I was like, I hate my job. I'm quitting everything. I'm just starting over because we have that ability to start from scratch. And so I was like, where in my life do I want to focus on? Honestly, I just want to do things that when I do them, I feel excited about it and I can't stop talking about it. Can that give me monetary gain? Can I be successful financially by doing that? And so I just, although I am in it and it's only been 6 or 7 months, the results of just not just how I feel and how my team is operating, but how my success has been in a way that I have never seen in the last 9 years of having online business. But doing it in a way that just it's a trust thing. It's just knowing that you can get where you want to go in an easier, better way. And that involves a little less doing and a little more feeling and a lot of inner work. And I do a lot of things that help me get to that place. And I don't think it's really sellable and scalable. And I'm okay with that, right? I don't want to necessarily sell it or scale it because it's so individual. It's so when you're ready, you will know it will be time for you to do it. And I just want people to be ready a little bit sooner, but I wasn't ready until 2 years ago. It took me a long time to get to that space, but when I was ready, I was all in and I knew that there was no way I was going back. And then the pendulum swings so much harder. Like if I skip meditation, I am a worse person than I ever was in my whole life because it's so, your new normal becomes so defined. It's so different. And so you just have to start getting practice in it. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now I get it. There is no way that I will go back.
Tell me your process.
So daily, physical.
Sure. Physical, spiritual, more the feel and the know. I feel like I have a context for your do.
The feel is the best example. I wrote a chapter in this about Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter. And I had gone 10 years loving Harry Potter and not remembering any of it. And I was watching Harry Potter and was like, this is crazy. I'm not present with anything. And so how can I be more present? And all I started to notice was, so every morning I wake up, as soon as I can, I get outside. If you're lucky enough to be in a place that's warm enough to be outside, because we are always in, we're just inside way too much. So I get into sunshine, no shoes, cross-legged. And I literally just look around for something to see that's going to make me think that's pretty, that's nice, that feels good. I could be in the worst mood, but you can always find something in your visual that's going to give you a good feeling.
I mean, I don't know. I live in Ohio, so...
Touche. There's got to be something, Web. You got to grow some herbs or something. I don't know.
I'll figure it out. Sorry to throw you off. I just had to interject.
No, that's good. So for me this morning, I had a hummingbird. It was like, I'm not in the best place, but there's a hummingbird and that's my spirit animal. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. So I, you know, kind of have a visual cue of something that feels good. And one thing that I think people really struggle with is if they're like not going to, I don't know. It's like they just sit in their own thoughts and think of all their things that they have to do. And I'm not a meditation teacher. There's so many amazing teachers that can teach meditation. But for me personally, the only way that I was able to do meditation is really feeling, and this gets really woo-woo, but I'm, you asked, so I'm going to tell you, is that we have chakras And I can actually feel them. And so if you can get into the place where you can have a tangible feeling, so you're not just sitting there with your eyes closed, but you can start to say, okay, well, I feel my, in my stomach, my solar plexus, which is my creativity, which is the number one thing that I need as an entrepreneur, especially right now when my business just closed and I need to figure out how to pay my people. My coaches have to be taken care of, et cetera. If I start my day without kind of tuning in, and you just think of it as like a line from your root all the way to your head, just trying to get that in one place. And the best resources, Emily Fletcher, Stress Less, Accomplish More. There's this amazing, I mean, there's millions of meditations, but it's saying, how can I personally get in alignment? And so sometimes that just looks like 15 minutes of breathing. Sometimes it looks like 5 minutes of jumping up and down. I just try to feel what we have already, which is our chakras. And I think that that is, you know, I feel so unsure of how to articulate this without saying, sounding completely ludicrous.
First of all, don't feel judged. I think one of the goals of Polymathic is to present new forms of knowledge. I think that, like I said at the very beginning, a lot of us have gone through things or experienced things that are very hard to articulate. And you know, those things have a net positive effect, hopefully, on our lives, right? I'll give you a really quick sort of detour example of this. I used to joke around about this with Bill Henninger, who is, you know, he's probably one of the best e-commerce operators there are. He and his wife, Katie Henninger, the owners of Rogue. And I used to say, Bill, man, I mean, you went to University of Michigan for your MBA. He's like, oh, the MBA didn't teach me anything. I'm like, Bill, how are you going to tell me that the MBA didn't teach you anything? I'm looking at you have a 900,000 square foot building in the middle of Columbus, Ohio. That doesn't happen by accident, you know? And I know that he's sort of being, you know, tongue in cheek and maybe a little bit humble, but I think it's important to acknowledge all of the inputs so that you can explain your outputs to other people through the proper context, right? Or in the proper context. And so for your life, this is one of those inputs. And I hope that you feel comfortable explaining them so that we can understand the proper context.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think when I look at meditation, and you can definitely use Headspace, you can definitely use apps and things. One thing that I found personally is that ultimately, if you are a doer, you are just trying to run away from thoughts in your own head. And so that's why meditation is so hard, because we have so much in our head and things that we just instantly want to do. So one of the maybe best takeaways that has been really helpful is before I start this breathing chakra alignment journey, whatever you want to call it, I do write my to-do list and every single thought. So I carry this book with me everywhere. I don't go anywhere without a journal. I fill one a week, constantly scribbling, scrambling graphs, arrows. My brain processes things through writing. And so I write kind of what is on my head that would prevent me from sitting still for 10 minutes, because 10 minutes is nothing. It's such a blip in time. We spend that on our phone in seconds, right? So it's saying, how can I, you know, get something off my head, my worries, my concerns, my to-do list, so that I can be present. And then I can sit and kind of breathe, do whatever it is. Sometimes it's easier than others. But it really does take this effort of consistency that is the only way that you will see the benefits of it. For me, I did it for a week and then I was like, okay, I don't really notice any changes. I'm going to continue to just wake up and go straight to my email and get shit done. And that's when I started to notice, oh my God, it's kind of like skipping vegetables or fish oil for a week. You really don't notice it when you take the fish oil, but then all of a sudden a week later, your knees start to hurt. And so it's just this accumulation of one, telling the world and universe and whoever you believe in that you recognize that you need to take time for you. This recognition that I am putting myself first, and that is something that not enough of us do. Number two, I'm recognizing that I have to be still in my head, and that stillness creates space. And all of us right now, more than ever, need to create space. We need to create room for ideas, room for innovation. We need to create room for us to think, because there's so much noise. And so if nothing else, it's saying, I know I'm jumping into a room full of people or a lot of problems and a full inbox of emails, but I know in this moment for the next 10 minutes, I can create space. So regardless of if space exists in my day to day, I decide right now that it does. And that is probably the most profound piece of meditation, and just kind of taking care of that spiritual self, whatever that is for you, that allows other doors to open, because there's room for them to open. You know, it's just jam packed in our head. So thinking of it in that way has been really helpful for me. Just visualizing my brain as like, it could be a New York City apartment, or I could be in a ranch in Colorado. What brain do I choose? What brain is going to be more successful and have more ideas? And it's always been proof with the creative ideas and also the stress around those ideas that doing that 10 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever it is will always pay off. It just takes a little bit more time for people to see it work for them.
So, I think you've aptly discussed like the last 5 to 7 years of your life. I think when we first met, you were coming off of at least one or two stints with MTV. I might be wrong. I don't remember, because that's not really how I know you. But explain the transition from that to the fitness era of you, so that we can discuss what's next. Where do you go next after this? Business-wise, professionally, socially, emotionally, so on and so forth.
Oh, so good. I guess the recap of that is, you know, 2010 to 2020, I was on a mission to change people. And 2020 to 2030, I am on a mission to change systems. And that is really what landed for me this year of, okay, we have a lot of things out there. I have a lot of things out there that can help someone be strong and be empowered and learn how to do this for themselves. Because the last thing that we need is more gurus and more fitness professionals or nutrition support that is self-reliant. Like that, you know, you have to continue to be a part of something in order to get the rewards. Like my goal has always been, learn the things and then do it for yourself. That's how it should always be.
That it works.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's not that, then it's just an ego trip, right? The business models that have that as their structure is so frustrating, because it just, whether it's a representation of the leadership or not, it's saying that you are teaching somebody that they can't actually do it on their own. And so it's just a vicious cycle, which we see over and over in the fitness world. Right. But I think with me, with MTV, I just feel so, my life has been so bizarre. When I look at, I saw myself on TV in 2008, 2009. And I hated what I saw, which drove me to do something about it and get into the world of fitness and nutrition and training. So that was one of the examples of kind of this hatred led me to do something, which was great for that time. But it led me into helping other people along the way, and then building that into what I did. Being so grateful for it, but also understanding that there is such a level of depth that is associated with that, right? It's still fitness, it's still nutrition, it's still one person at a time. It's people that are able to afford Women's Health Magazine. Even though I'm so grateful they found me that way, it's a demographic that I will always be happy to serve, but also know that I refuse to stay in that box for another 10 years. And there's just so many more people that need help that don't have access to it, right? Education is one thing. You can educate people again and again and again, and they can choose with their assets and with their situation to do something about it, because they have that ability. They have, whether it's the money or the resources or the access to the gym, even vegetables, etc. That's a demographic that I am grateful to serve, but I also know there is a lot more people on the side of no access, no resources, no education around it. And even if they had education around it, would it really matter? No, because these are 14, 15 year old kids that are just trying to get through what they're trying to get through with their parents. So that is where I am not sure what the future holds, but I know it is important for me to at least address and talk about with the platform that I have to help share those stories more and also help be a part of the solution, whatever that solution is, that fitness and nutrition right now is a luxury, and it shouldn't be. It should be a necessity now more than ever. Our immune system should be able to better handle what is happening right now.
Well, let's talk about that. Because I think that's a really, really important point. And I was just talking about it with a buddy of mine named Josh today, a father to a daughter on my daughter's soccer team. And, you know, we were arguing back and forth about the merits of the politics of the situation. Do you reopen the economy and let the cards fall as they may, or do you maintain this sort of expectation of social distancing? His argument was, we need to put an end to this so that we don't lose our entire economy. And I respect it. My argument was, I believe you and I agree with you. However, I need to maintain some empathy, right? And here's the basis of that empathy. My empathy was for the people that aren't like you and I, right? We obviously take performance very seriously. I think one of the things that I kicked off our conversation with was, I'm pretty sure I went through it last week. It's the reason why I'm here by myself and my family's in Florida, as I said earlier, because I didn't want to present any danger to my parents at my parents' house. So clearly, whether I went through it or not, I'm confident that I can withstand it. I'm confident that you could withstand it. How do you help people understand the importance of fitness and the principles that you live on a daily basis, who haven't yet sort of equated the dangers of today with their lack of health and fitness?
Well, I think it's even one step further. It is the world of stress that is survivalism. There's a really great Hidden Brain episode called Tunnel Vision that I just think everyone should listen to really kind of hear the storytelling of it, of saying we are divided, where you either see opportunity or you see what you have to do to survive. And if we don't really acknowledge that there's just two subsets, that's how it is. I think it's really as simple as that. I think everyone has the ability to do something and create something. And right now, all of us are going to be put in a position to revive what was. It is about reviving, recreating, innovating. But even before that, and this is forever, I mean, all of this is the root of the issue for me that I see, and I don't know the solution. I don't know really what to do with this information, except I know it's important to talk about and know that this is such the start of the conversation is more and more people are going to get to this place where if you do not have your root taken care of, which is a home base and your financial security in any way, you cannot see opportunity. And so what that might mean for somebody is they are not going to see the things that maybe would inspire them to make a new program that's online that could be sold and monetize it. They might not be able to see an opportunity or even a job posting because their brain is too linear, trying to get from point A to point B to get some paper towels to pick up their kid who now doesn't even have school at home. It's just an insane cycle. So I guess for me, it's even one step further of like, well, what does the stress state do to our immune system? That's the conversation that we all need to know. Stress is horrible for our immune system. Now, what does stress do for opportunity? And how can we start to see that economics and financial security is so tied with that stress that you are just going to divide more and more and more and more. So it starts to make a lot of sense of where we're at and why we see people stay in that level below poverty line, struggling and never sure how to get out of it. It's not knowing how to get them to understand it. I mean, it's not resources. It's not, here's more education. It's what, I don't know what it is. It's definitely not Andrew Yang's approach, but it's something similar where it's like, we have to understand that access is no longer negotiable. It's not negotiable. We have to provide food. We have to provide healthy things. We have to figure out how to get these people into a state where they are not so stressed. They're not so worried. They're not so insecure. And if we are those people too, we have to understand that starts with us too. So if we are feeling financially stressed, we know that ties into our immune system. So I don't know if that helps at all or even explains it, but I just think that conversation is so needed, that we are so, so luxury driven in our health and wellness world right now. And yes, you can work out, but I think it comes down to the stress that we have and then access to food, because your whole body is just a big ball of cells. How are you taking care of your cells? How are you nurturing and nourishing? And that comes down to the foods that we eat, and it's not fast food, right? That's going to help us feel like we can be inspiring and inspirational. It's really a big conversation. I don't know where I went with this, but I would love your thoughts on that.
No, listen, I think that you have a point. I mean, you're talking about suppressed immune systems. A lot of those effects are clearly life-driven, to your point. A lack of physical fitness, food choices, high levels of stress, poor cortisol management, however you want to equate it. These are all actually things that most entrepreneurs deal with as well. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I was going to ask you, and one way that I sort of disagreed with what you said, or at least one part of it, and maybe it wasn't a disagreement, but it's a counterpoint. You know, that collective stimuli provides an advantage if you want it to be, right? Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people that grew up in really crappy circumstances. And so, you know, one thing that used to make me upset during election cycles was when people would say, oh, we need no more billionaires, right? And here's how this relates to what you were saying. Well, you know, when you grew up where I grew up, you know, I grew up in Fifth Ward, Houston, which is no different than Conte, California, or the Bronx, New York, or, you know, Liberty City, Miami. You pick a crappy place where you can get shot. That's where I lived, right? And you have two options, because there's very little middle ground, right? You don't become a garbage man from Fifth Ward or Liberty City, because that's too respectable, right? Like, that's a pretty great middle class life if you land that position. It's either you completely fail in either that's death or that's imprisonment or you name it, or you hit the ball out of the park and maybe you play basketball or football, or maybe you rap, or maybe you find a way to be some type of business person. And so a lot of the folks that I personally admire are the people that found a way to be business people out of those circumstances, right? Whether you look at the highest strata of that person, Jay-Z or Sean Carter, Sean Combs, you know, you name it, or, you know, the Mav Carters, who is essentially LeBron's protege, Spring Hill Entertainment, and so on and so forth. These are guys that are 35, 36 years old. Mav is, you know, worth in the high tens, if not early hundreds of millions of dollars, right? Can you get to that point without the stimulus of wanting to be something extraordinarily large? And can you get to that point without that fear, right? The fear that is the result of a lot of that stimulus, right? I don't think the answer is yes. I think you would argue that the answer is yes, but I don't think that anyone can get to that place with the peace of mind that you've been preaching so far.
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's the equivalent of me saying I went on reality TV and I hated who I saw, so I changed it, right? It's still that same kind of like you something negative inspires something positive. So it's just at a very small degree. I guess where I struggle with, and I'd love your opinion on this, is, you know, I work with Girls Inc. of Metro Denver. I am in love with these girls, but it is, you know, 13 to 16 year old girls that, you know, no matter what their after school program is or what it looks like, they still have a certain thing that they're going home to. And a lot of those parents are really supportive, and a lot of them, maybe grandparents, are getting them there. So they clearly are engaged in their daughter's life. But there is something that is, for me, it's still missing the mark, where I feel the 1% that might be the Damon Johns, what happened to the other 99% that maybe did still have that ambition but couldn't get there? Did they just fall off? Did they, you know, where are they being spoken for? And especially for women and for girls, where are they being taken care of, and how can they be taken care of besides after school programs, and how can their families be taken care of so that the success of what they want is clearly laid out, instead of them just shooting for the moon, instead of them just going for it and having that bigger personality that can take that on? What if they didn't have such a big personality, or were shy, or were a little bit more timid and didn't have that person holding their hand, or they weren't brave enough to do it because they didn't know how? You know, it's just putting so much pressure on that little girl or that little person to say, well, shoot for the moon or you don't get it. Can't there be an in-between for those in-between people, so it doesn't have to be an Oprah scenario?
In your own way, you experienced a form of that. You experienced sort of an evolution that was beneficial to you, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You probably would not have experienced that same evolution if you had the mindset that you have now, but 10 years ago.
Hmm.
Right? So by that, I mean, like, you have to have some level of rigidity, fear-based structuralism, a passion in pursuit of self-improvement that could be driven internally or externally, depending on the person. Like, that's an important phase, right? And so when you ask, what's the in-between, for me, that in-between was, I got lucky and I got into this great all boys Catholic school, and, you know, they pretty much beat the shit out of me, right? Physically and mentally. Like, it was, you know, just,
yeah,
we want you to fail. That was essentially the mantra of the school. And we started off with like 300 boys in the beginning, and we graduated like 60% of them, which is ridiculous attrition at high school, at the high school level. The point is, like, that provided a level of structuralism and expectation and some type of self-drive, I guess you could say, that became useful later on. So for you, I know that this is sort of a cycle for you. You said this earlier in our conversation. You say that you live the process, you are learning in real time, and then eventually you get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm confident. I'm going to execute on this, or I'm going to teach on this. The question for you is, at what point do you start your own organization, right? Or at what point do you support a boarding school or an organization that can support these, you know, high prospect individuals that need, I guess, evening time, nighttime, early morning support? Like, is that a possibility for you?
You know, I am in the phase of, if I put it out there, it comes. It really does. It's if I say I am wanting this for something or somebody, the opportunity always presents itself. And that's the best part, I think, of being spiritually in tune, is that it really does, if it's supposed to happen, show up in really beautiful, magical ways. And so for me right now, I think that the best thing that I can do is, and trust me, I love that you said that, because I have been looking for nonprofits like crazy trying to figure out what's happening for these school programs. So if schools cut, what's going on for these lunches? 20 million kids depend on these lunches every single day, Monday through Friday. It's the only meal that they get that's balanced. What's showing up? Who's taking care of that? What organizations do I believe in and can I support? And that is always the start of finding the gap. That is always the start of figuring out what doesn't exist that should. And so for me, it's like, well, what really would make an impact? Not because I think it would, but because it truly would. And that's the feedback that I would love from even listeners and from you of like, well, what really would make a dent for people that don't have access to healthy food or don't have access to a path of success? And my dream has always been to have a community garden in every state. I think every county should have a community garden that's a nonprofit and access for anybody to come to and participate in, not just to help it grow, but also to take and eat. And I also think that there needs to be something that allows, especially females and girls and women in a world of social media and in a world of exploitation and seeing how many people are going to post what gets more feedback. And in turn, that kind of puts them in a cycle of posting superficial things or posting too much about their body or posting things or feeling like they have to sell themselves, sell their body. There's got to be a better way for success because men haven't really had that highlighted as much because you know, you can get through things just by talking and doing and et cetera. But for women specifically, there is definitely a trajectory of, in order to be successful, I have to X, Y, Z. And I think that if I could help create some sort of program or mentorship or even a track of some sort to show people that there is so many other ways to do it, from age 10. I mean, we should be talking about business to girls that are 10 years old. We just need to have those conversations because post high school education, it might be relevant in 2 years. So I just think that that's something that's really important for me to just at least keep the door open and knowing that that's something I really care about and something that I really want and something that I really think I can speak to. What organization exists, or is that mine to create?
Well, I think that's a beautiful way to end the conversation. because ironically, I think that probably will become your organization to create. I just feel like you're wired that way, and it's very evident that it's very important to you. And you know, just judging by the cycles that you've experienced in life, it seems like a natural fit, but I will not speak that into existence for you. Because I know.
I mean, you just had me speak it into existence. That was amazing.
But you know, it's one of those things where I'll let you be you. But if you need any support from me or any of the people that are listening to this, my team is your team. You've been a longtime friend, and I really appreciate having you on.
Webb, you are just so wonderful. You and your whole family. I have never felt so supported energetically without ever really even, how many conversations have we had in person, right?
Not a lot.
That's just so cool. That's the energy you bring. And I'm just so in love with everything you're doing and you're just doing it. You're a doer. And I have such respect for you.
Well, now I'm just trying to be more of a knower. That's the goal. Yes. So I look forward to your help on that journey as well. But Em, thank you so much. I'll certainly point everyone in the direction of the ways that they can support you and your wonderful endeavors, and take care of yourself.
Thank you, Webb. I appreciate you.